Chapter 26. The nearest yard running intermodal trains was in Amarillo, which was good news. The van had enough charge to get there, enough left over to ditch it outside the north yard by an old scrap processing plant. From there, they cut around the edge of the scrapyard's property and picked up the tracks on the north side. Their hiding spot was outside the rail yard, out of range of the probes and sensors, and all they had to worry about was the occasional bull. The silence of the area was the best thing. There were some decrepit livestock yards close by that looked like they had seen neither worker nor steer in 20 years. It was all quiet, stale air, and the only movement was of the crows digging through trash. It was an easy job to get Sigma out of the van, past the property, and tucked in under the trees off the main line without being seen. They all wedged in behind a garbage pile and waited for evening to come on, holding their breath when the occasional security truck lumbered by. They saw many trains pass along the track as they waited for the sun's retreat. Dora called them IMs. "There goes another IM," she would whisper, nodding needlessly as it rattled past, wheels sometimes squealing. Then she would shake her head and say, "It's probably a good one, but we can't go in the daylight. That's just asking for it." They sat quietly, breathing the rust smell of the scrapyard, the rubber smells and the wood and dust smells. They spoke very little. Dora spent much time looking for movement, while Giles was too nervous to do anything other than fidget. Sigma did not understand the discomfort that comes with prolonged silence, and so conserved his energy. The inner workings of his core suggested energy conservation was a wise policy. The next opportunity to recharge might not come, and he did not wish to drain himself prematurely. He wondered if it would be necessary to shut down certain sensory functions to preserve his battery, and hoped he would not need to do so. He did not wish to be suboptimal. When dusk fell, Dora whispered, "Sigma, how much cloud access do you have?"
"Comparable to the human experience, though I can exert certain exigencies."
"Good. Next train that passes, I want you to get the number off the lead engine and check it against BNSF's shipping schedule. Amarillo North Yard, eastbound track."
"Understood, miss. And what am I looking for?"
"We want to know if it's heading to Chicago. Let me know if it is."
"Understood."
The first IM pulled through 20 minutes later, but it was not headed to Chicago. They stared at it glumly for a long time as it sat there, running out east and west for farther than they could see. Dora sighed and said, "This'll be a while. They'll probably run an inspection, and that train is at least 3 miles long if it's afoot. They'll be at it a while." She looked up into the sky and seemed to taste the air. "We're okay, though. This will be good."
"What do you mean?" Giles asked.
"The weather is good. Not too cold. Hopefully it'll hold like that all the way to Chicago. We're okay for now, but we'll need to get off at some point and get some decent gear."
He looked at her face in profile. It was fast becoming a soft shape in the night, losing its features as the sun died. "Gear?"
"Jackets, packs, something warm to sleep in. A tent, maybe, if we can find it."
"A tent? Is that a joke?"
Her shape moved, and he felt her eyes upon him. "Giles, this isn't like buying a ticket and going where you want. It's illegal. Please don't get the vapors or anything, but it's something we're not supposed to do. If a bull sees us, we might get sent on our way, or they might arrest us and lock us up if they want to be assholes. Or they might take us around the back for some fun before they lock us up. So, we move according to the train schedule, not the other way around. We move only when it's safe and when it's smart. It means we could end up doing a lot of waiting, just as we're doing now, and we may end up spending a night in a field if there's a run of bad luck."
"How long do you figure it will take us to reach New York?" he asked.
Dora's shape shrugged in the darkness. "If you do what I say, when I say, maybe tomorrow or the day after. If you don't, longer. Maybe not at all if you don't."
He nodded and thought on this. Then he said, "How long have you been doing this, Dora?"
"Long," she said. "We should get a knife, too. A knife or something we can sharpen and put a handle on. I wish we still had your kitchen knife."
Why?
"A knife is a thing you learn to carry. A tramp with a gun is rare on the rails. Most times if they have a gun, they haven't any bullets for it, and if they do, they don't want to waste a shot. A tramp who wants to interfere with you, though, is not such a rare thing. Most times they let you be.
but you learn to carry a knife, too, for the times they don't. If they see the knife, and more importantly, if they see you will give them the knife many times over, they'll leave you alone. And then sometimes it's necessary to give them the knife anyway so that the others can see you do it.
Jesus, Giles whispered.
I feel I must remind you of my presence, Sigma said.
I didn't forget. Something could happen to you. Someone could wipe your clock, or we don't find an outlet in time when you need it. Knives don't need recharging.
Jesus Christ, Giles whispered again.
She continued as if he said nothing. The trains are not crewed, so if there is a stop, it'll be to wait for another train to move, or a reroute of some sort, or an inspection. Inspections are manageable if you're smart, but you must keep out of sight. The bull doesn't try very hard when he looks for you. He relies on the sensors. Also, the trains are very long, and there's much to cover, so he'll take a pass and just flash the cars broadside. The idiots get caught during an inspection. If there is no inspection, then the train will head on through. But when it stops, you go low and hide, whether you think it's an inspection or not. It's always an inspection, whether it ends up being an inspection or not. Do you understand?
Yes, very well.
What if we're seen?
If we are seen, we run like hell. A bull won't chase you very far past the yard.
A bang came from the track, loud and sharp in the still night air. Then more banging, running down the track away to the west in a fast departing wave. The cars began to roll, ponderously slow. So slow, Giles knew he could pass them at an easy walk. They sat and watched it for nearly an hour before the tail engine fell out of sight. They remained in silence under the darkness of the night. The branches moved softly overhead and made the shadows at their feet swell and darken, and the visible parts of their skin showed gray in the light of the moon. Sometimes a bright headlight would come on in the distance, and the shadows became sharp and loud. This was the passing of a truck, and they knew to get low behind the rubble. There was an old refrigerator laid over on its side that Sigma hid behind, and they watched silently as the truck passed. After a while, Giles's heart stopped blasting away in his chest whenever the lights came through, but it took practice. "What if the truck comes by when our train arrives?" Giles whispered.
"And we don't go. We'll have to wait."
"Well, we could be out here all night."
"That's right."
More bangs and squeals coming from somewhere far off, from another part of the yard. Giles experimented with the lenses as they waited, and found he could pull up a clock overlay to see the time. He discovered through the experimental movements of his eyes and the flesh around them how to shift the map, to send it away and bring it back, how to change the colors of the guard markers to bright red sores. When he had it the way he liked, he set the map back down to three dimensions and looked around. Then he increased the range and played with the display density until he could tell where and how far away they all were. None of this required Sigma's assistance, and Giles was proud.
"What are you up to?" Dora asked.
"Looking."
"I can see that. You keep darting your head around. You're making me nervous. What is it?"
"I'm finding the guards. They're far off now. I think there are only three of them."
"There are more."
"I see only three.
Trust me, there are more."
"Fine," Giles agreed. In his mind, Sigma said, "She can't know that for sure, Giles. She's going on what the world has shown her. Even so, listen to her." Giles grunted and then shook his head at Dora when she looked at him again. Another IM came through the yard an hour later, and this time when Sigma checked, they discovered it was a good target. They waited a while for the engine to get well down the line. When it disappeared from sight, Giles tensed, but Dora took his hand and held him back.
"Hang on," she whispered. "We need the right kind of car."
"Okay, what are we looking for?"
"A box car would be great, but truck trailers otherwise. They call them piggybacks, the trailers, that is. And you don't want just any trailer. Have you seen them on the road, Giles, with the thin skirts running along the length between the wheels, hanging down on each side?"
"Yes, those skirts are for wind resistance, I expect."
Dora shrugged. She was not interested in the intended purpose of the skirts. "For us, they are walls." She did not say more, so Giles only nodded and said, "Okay." The spine of the mechanized snake continued to wind out ahead of them, spreading like a dream spreads when you awake suddenly, when you come up from the darkness and the dream is still there on top of you, but then begins to spread and thin itself away until soon there is only the feeling of the dream, and you are either saddened or elated that it is gone. Soon Dora's hand squeezed down on his, and then she was pulling forward, and he heard the shy clank of Sigma struggling to come out from behind the busted-out refrigerator. They ran lowly and clumsily over the gravel, the loose-packed gravel sucking at their feet, and stopped between the gap of a concrete bridge that ran over the tracks and an exhausted shack 20 feet east of it. They crouched in the shadow of the shack, and Giles saw the graffiti everywhere, covering everything in a riotous blanket of color. There was so much of it around him that all the details were hidden. It was just the colors made dull in the moonlight, the thick tracks of black paint that ran through it, and the suggestion that on such hard canvas, art and obscenity lived together. "There," Dora hissed, gesturing at the piggyback trailers as they emerged from under the bridge. Giles looked through the train and beyond at the pulsating red sore of a bull coming their way. "We need to hurry if we want that one. Security is coming back this way." She was off like a fired arrow, Giles running after her, low to the ground again, feet stuttering over gravel, lowly, nearly falling, catching himself and driving ahead with his legs and feet, Sigma crunching loudly behind. She caught the front of the closest car as it rolled by, climbed aboard, and waved frantically at Giles to hurry up. He wrapped his hands over the cold iron of the little stepladder and saw that the red sore was getting closer. Something hard pressed into his lower back like a cold, knobby mallet, and Sigma sent, "Go on, under the trailer." He watched as Dora slipped down the center of the car beneath the first trailer axle, saw how the arch of her rump clipped the bar, and wondered how Sigma would get through. He wondered what they would do on the other side. It seemed as if there was no room at all in there. Then her hand was thrust out at him, waving and flapping in the moonlight like a gray fish, and somewhere deep in the shadows beneath the trailer, he heard a new voice say,
"Hey, what the hell?"
The voice cracked like ripping canvas. She grabbed hold of his shoulders as he tried to wiggle under and tugged. He squirted through to the underworld, and then he found himself crouched on his knees beneath the trailer, and there was more room than he could have imagined. There was room enough under there to sit upright with plenty of space between his head and the trailer, and the skirts of the trailer stretched on for the whole length with the wheels blocking him in on either side. There was room enough to spread out, to lay down fully.
"Get the fuck out of here,"
the ripping canvas voice called. Giles looked toward the tail and saw a darkened mass overlaid with the green concentric throb of a heartbeat.
"Get the fuck out yourself," Dora said. "There's room enough in here." "Hell if there is. Don't never run more than two to a group, not without a boxcar. You either know that or you're ignorant. Or you're desperate. I don't need you in any case."
"Shut up," Dora hissed. "There's a bull."
"Well, go on and see him, then."
Giles saw the mass shift and began to look hard into the darkness for detail. Behind him, he heard the crunch of Sigma forcing himself through the gap between skirt and trailer wheel, and when the turret made it through, the world around Giles washed out in hazy green like scum off a pea soup, and when the haze deadened, it was all in green. He could see that the lump was a man now, described in shades of green and black.
"Watch it, Dora. He's got a pipe."
Giles saw his eyes go wide and pale. The man gasped,
"You brought the hoppy! Fucking bastards brought the hoppy around!"
He disappeared under the skirt, and Giles soon saw the throb of his green heartbeat floating back west toward the train's tail.
"Christ, he's running right at the guard," Giles said.
"Quiet," Dora whispered.
"He'll tell them we're in here."
"No."
"No?
He won't, Rat. Keep your head down." She glanced back at Sigma, and her eyes flashed greenly like those of a cat.
"Sigma," Giles said, "turn off the starlight and keep down."
The green detail under the trailer faded to black. Giles watched through the train and beyond where the pulsing red sore met the green echo of the vagrant.
"He's got him," Giles said.
"Shh." The train rocked like the hitching hips of an old nag as it rolled slowly away. Giles crawled up to lay beside Dora on his elbows, shivering against the cold of the metal flatbed. He watched the markers in the distance, and Dora watched him closely. The little markers floating in his vision faded away, becoming smaller.
"Well," she asked.
"They're not coming."
"Uh-huh,"
she said. "Told you he wouldn't rat.
Freight hoppers don't rat to the bull."
"He left everything behind," Giles said. There was a confused mass of items farther down the flatbed, wedged up against the trailer skirt where the vagrant's frightened kicking had bunched it all up.
Wait until we get a ways out from the yard, then we'll see what he left.
How far? He asked.
Not so far. A mile or so. Can you see the ass end of the train in that head map of yours?
Giles glanced at Sigma. I am sorry, but no. Only the beacon of the leading engine is active.
He nodded and said to Dora, No luck then. I can only see us. I can see the tracks for miles, though. I can see them all the way into Chicago if I look right.
You can see how far away from the yard we are?
I can see how far we are from everything, almost. Do you want to know how far we are from London?
I just want to know how far we are from the yard, Giles.
He paused a moment.
I'm coming up on 80 meters from the property line.
She nodded and rolled up onto the elevated center shelf of the rail car. She shifted to her back, tucked her arms behind her head, and said,
Say when we're a mile out. It'll be okay to move around a little when we get that far.
Not sooner? A mile is quite far.
You get even farther if you don't make foolish risks, she said.
He thought of everything else they had done together over the last couple of days, and could not reconcile the brash Dora of that time with the cautious one lying beside him now. He mimicked her position, wedging his own arms beneath his head for a pillow, and focused on the easy rock of the rail car. It was the banging that awakened him later when the train picked up speed and began to make a real go of it. He lay there a while, trying to pass back into sleep before his skin came alive enough to feel the chill air. But it was no use now. Now they were inside the snake's belly, and the snake bucked and surged forward like a winding bullet, and he found his head filled with the crashing of metal and the shrieking of metal, the constant, rusted grinding of metal. His whole world was now a world of metal, a metal tomb, and it blasted within his ears like roaring hell. He looked over at Dora and found her much the same as he had left her. He made the lens starlight come back and saw the green of her sclera, the darkness of its iris as she watched the underside of the trailer above. She lay there in a relaxed boredom, appearing to be in the exact place that she should. Where are we? He shouted. She rolled her head over and thrust her chin at him. Her face said she had not heard him. He repeated himself quite loudly, and she shouted, You tell me! He took a moment to consult the map. I guess we're a few miles out. This damn train is going about 95 right now. I can't believe it. They get moving pretty good, she agreed. Did you want to look over the hobo stuff? Already did. Oh, he said.
He waited for her to say what there was, but she said nothing.
Well?
Well?
Well, what the hell's there?
Oh, sorry. Some good stuff. Some stuff not so good. Some sweaters, pants, and other clothes just as skanky as you please. I tossed those out on the rails a while ago. Washed my hands after, too. Just nasty stuff. You wouldn't believe this guy. But he had a good pack, so we'll keep that. And there was a sleeping bag that I've opened up and pinned under the toaster to air out.
You okay? Giles asked.
Sure, why?
You seem far off right now.
Oh, yeah. I guess I do.
She offered nothing further. It was very hard to speak with her in the forever clamor of the snake's belly, that unrolling of the longest explosion in history. It sounded to Giles like a giant ship, a yacht or cruise liner perhaps, plowing through a dock, then a building, then the traffic of the streets beyond, rolling over and over like dry thunder. He fell to silence, listened to the world around him, and wondered if he would become used to it. 15 minutes later, it was still hard listening, so he tried to get Sigma's attention by calling to him in a normal speaking voice. In his mind, the response came easily.
Yes, Giles.
Oh, good, he said. I was afraid you wouldn't hear me.
It's less hearing than it is feeling.
I see. Would you still hear me if I said nothing at all? If I only moved my mouth but made no sound?
No, your vocal cords must vibrate for me to receive you.
How does that work?
You speak and I feel, Giles.
No, I mean, what are you using to pick that up? What kind of sensor is it? How is it you can pick out the vibration of my vocal cords in all this background racket?
I'm using the nodes, Giles. Your skull makes a natural transducer, and then there are also transducers in the nodes, and I can pull the traffic.
You mean to tell me these things double as microphones? Giles asked.
Yes, that is correct. My God. I knew they'd done the lenses, but... My God.
It is not a thing often advertised. Giles laughed, but did not answer. After a while, he remembered what he wanted to ask.
You're projecting sound into my head directly via the nodes right now?
Yes.
Can you project white noise? Can you drown out all this racket?
I could, but probably should not.
Why ever not?
I'm currently at 75% power. There's no telling when I'll have an opportunity to recharge again. I'm operating at reduced capacity right now to preserve my battery. Most of my physical systems are shut off entirely. I've only retained enough to keep your lenses working along with my basic lower functions.
Shit, Giles sighed.
I am sorry.
No, I get it.
He jammed his fingers in his ears and began to hum. It helped a little, but the banging of the snake continued to find him from far away. They traveled on a few hours. When Giles could no longer stand it, he scooted down the length of the flatbed and crawled out from under the trailer. It was wonderful to be in the open night, hair whipping out around his face and little stings, and he was able to catch puffs of clean air in his nostrils and mouth, sometimes when the wind came just right. The smell of diesel and oiled metal always came back to find him, but sometimes the wind came on just right, and for a while the night smelled of perfume and dry static. The banging was not so bad out there, and he looked out across the flat desert in relief. There were dark, unshaped blobs out in the distance. They could have been buildings or boulders, trucks, or the bodies of some ancient creatures forgotten out in the spaces between cities. He looked up at the sky, and there were more stars overhead than he ever expected to see in his entire life, more than he thought could be found in the galaxy. He wondered if Annalise was up there, if she was one of them. He wondered if she watched him now, and if she laughed at him, or was worried, or annoyed, or sad. He wanted so very much to believe she could be up there, but he was not that sort of man. He wanted it badly, though, as badly as he wished to see her again. He hated the sort of man he was, and wished he could be the kind that believed his Anna was up in those stars. Belief should be a simple thing. So many people did it every day. But he could not. He could not make his mind work in that way, and he hated it and himself. He wished that death was a thing to look forward to, that he could make himself think she would be there on the other side of it waiting. But death was only another bland thing, another flavorless bread when all the food of the world had gone flavorless like gray ash. It could come now or at the end, and it would not matter. It would not matter because she was not on the other side. Later, a westbound train passed them, and he scrambled under the trailer. Dora laughed at this, but then nodded at him in approval for his quick action. She shouted that his instincts were good and that he should keep it up. He could hear the straining of her voice as she shouted, but she did so anyway, and it made him feel good to hear it. Later on, they came to a tunnel, and Dora hurried to soak the hems of their shirts in water. They held these over their faces against the harsh diesel fumes and the clinging soot. It helped a little, but Giles still tasted the oiliness in his mouth when they came out the other side. The night air was cold in the open, but not so bad under the trailer. You could never have it all. The banging was not so bad outside the trailer, but the wind came to get you then, and you might be seen. It was safer under the trailer, and the cold was more manageable, but it sounded like dynamite inside your head. It was not long before Giles was fed up with the entire experience. He used his teeth to start a tear in his shirt and ripped off a scrap about the size of his hand. He tore the scrap into four small pieces, jammed two of them into each ear, and handed the other two over to Dora. She nodded her thanks as she packed her ears. They lay down beside each other, the hoplite serving as sentinel, and before long the cold was such that Dora huddled into Giles's side. Neither of them were yet ready to wrap up in the vagrant sleeping bag. Not until they could get a good look at it in the light, at least. And so he wrapped an arm around her. Before long, her head was pillowed at the hollow of his shoulder, and he could smell the desert and the diesel in her hair as the great snake rattled the world down around them. He thought of the stars overhead and wished he could look at them again.